Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to Down to Agribusiness with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome once again to this week's Down to Agribusiness podcast. Delighted to be joined once again by Anne Finnegan and Philem O'Neill from the Agribiz team here in the Farmers Journal. Folks, if I might just start off by, I suppose, maybe outlining, you know, the two of the big co-ops and, two of the most significant co-ops. Obviously, Plan B is going to be a significant co-op once that deal is across the line and they have a new name for Plan B, etc., and all that kind of thing. But the two most significant co-ops, obviously, are Lakeland and Dairy Gold, and they both produced their annual report in the last week. And there's, you know, it's producing a lot of food for thought for a lot of shareholders, but also for others in the industry. I mean, the background I'll say very quickly is that, like, both co-ops have grown significantly. Probably on different trajectories. Dairy Gold, all the suppliers would have increased milk production since 2015. Lakeland probably had more steady growth all the way through for the last, I call it, 10 years. That, like, up in the border in the top half of the country, the quota wasn't as significant, and there was always a kind of other sources of quota flowing in across the water and between processors up in the northern half of the country. So Dairy Gold, again, I'm just giving a background. Like, I mean, Dairy Gold effectively, you know, nailed their colours to the mask in terms of the grass curve, and that this was the best piece for shareholders and members in terms of giving them the best return. And they put the processing capacity in place, and they funded it through a number of different sources, including revolving funds, shareholder funds, loan notes, and probably obviously as well lower milk price, you know. So Lakeland did something very different and didn't ask the shareholders to participate at all in any of the investment in Bailyborough or Archigarvan, and I suppose funded it through the business, just the core business. So that obviously that meant a lower return for milk suppliers in the Lakeland catchment, you know. But listen, I mean, in fairness, both of them, the numbers stack up. The numbers are good for all of them in terms of, you know, obviously turnover up significantly on both of them. In fairness, like, Dairy Gold up to 1.17 billion in turnover. So it's like they're significant businesses now. Like, I mean, Lakeland, 2 billion litres of milk from 3,200 farms, and they have a bigger turnover, 1.3 billion in terms of turnover. You know, and so, like, they're huge businesses in their own right. But I mean, it's all driven on dairy farmers and the expansion in milk through the regions, particularly over the last, I suppose, 5 years for both of them. So, I mean, it's a tale of two businesses, two milk businesses, both growing, both investing, but doing it in a very different fashion. I mean, and you'd be close enough to the whole funding piece and all that kind of thing that goes a part of that. Like, you know, I mean, they did take two very different routes in terms of, kind of, I suppose, buying in their members or their milk suppliers into the whole piece around producing more milk.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see. I suppose it's interesting to see how that's playing out now. And certainly in terms of Lakeland's moves around peak milk now, Jack. I mean, what's the sense that you're getting among dairy farmers as to the strategy in Lakeland versus the strategy in Dairy Gold, and are Lakeland suppliers paying for that now?
I think they are, and I think very clearly a lot of shareholders in Lakeland are coming to me and saying we're not getting a clear vision of where this business is going and where we can supply or not supply in the next 5 or 10 years. But the complete contrast in Dairy Gold is that they've said they'll listen no problem in capacity to 2025 in a seasonal curve piece, this is a big piece, this is money obviously every year as well in terms of processing capacity. Dairy Gold have a 10-to-1 curve, so that means it's 10 times higher at peak than it is in the trough, whereas Lakeland is only 4-to-1, and yet the suppliers there don't know where they're going in terms of the next 5-10 years in terms of investment, in terms of processing capacity. So there's a lot of, I call it, and look at it, angst, because a lot of suppliers, they knew they weren't, they're not shareholders in the case of Lakeland, and hence, the complete contrast in Dairy Gold is that they are all shareholders. They've all had to share up to a certain level. It has cost them money, of course, but it is an investment in their co-op as well, and they feel a stronger ownership to it and a stronger tie to it. So
there's a headspace or a headroom there for to meet the expansion that Dairy Gold will see in their member base. I mean, what are they looking at, Jack, coming down the line? Are they looking at 2-3% out over the next 5 years?
They're looking at 2-3% over the next 5 years, and they can handle that. They're up to a kind of a capacity available of 52 million litres at the moment. Last year, it reached a peak of 47 million litres. And they're saying with another small investment, they can get up to 55 million litres capacity at peak. They're saying that what their suppliers, and again, of course, and we have to keep this in, we're in a new world in terms of fertilizer prices, in terms of input prices, etc., and that kind of thing. So that is going to impact on prices, whether we like it or not. And that is going to maybe, because the time those surveys were done, it was a different world, So there's a bit to come on that, we can't say for definite, but the surveys they've done definitely between 2-3%.
And is that similar? Sorry, Phelan.
Sorry, I was just going to jump in there and be devil's advocate for a minute, and I'll put this to both of you. We talk about in terms of the peak milk season and the ratio that Dairy Gold have of 10-to-1 and just 4-to-1 with Lakeland. I would suggest that that's probably part of the reasoning for the Lakeland decision not to go into heavy investment in that space, because at the end of the day, they're very much in the northern half of the country. They don't have the access to the early grass growth that they have in the deep south. So, to some extent, then, it's the two businesses is not governed by the environment that they're working in as much as anything else.
Yeah, I go first then. In terms of Lakeland, there's a piece there definitely, and there's no one saying that you can achieve what you can achieve in Cork, that you can achieve in Cavan or upwards, but I mean, the issue, Phelan, is in terms of, it comes back to the market. And when I asked Michael Handley this week in terms of, what more can he get from out-of-season milk, he can't get any premium for it, and it's even more difficult to process in the out of season. So there's no premium for a farmer to put it costs more for a farmer to produce it, and there's no premium from the market in terms of the product that he's producing during that November, December, January period. So the reasoning behind trying to set up farmers to produce more milk in that period is not there, because it's costing them more, and there's no market from the premium. There's no premium from the market in terms of the product that they're producing at that time of the year.
So, yeah, it's hard.
It's all loaded against. Sorry, Anne, I'll pull out after this one. So it's basically the Lakeland approach then. It's very much loaded against the farmer.
Yeah, I feel it's unfair to be sending signals that, listen, we're taking money off you at a time when it's efficient for you to produce milk, and we're going to put it onto the shoulders when it's not efficient for you, and it's not efficient for our business. It's kind of, it's not telling the true story. The signals that you're sending are not helping up.
Okay. Jack, you've analysed, I suppose, the milk price across the two co-ops, and it's fair to say you've looked at Arrivo in the week before as well. You know, in terms of alignment with PPI, how have these processors aligned with PPI, and I suppose where they haven't, what's the justification there?
Yeah, I mean it's a good one, Anne, because I mean it is a bone of contention with milk suppliers when they see the PPI, which reflects what the Ornua can get back from the market, and then they compare their farm gate milk price from the various processors, whether it's Arrivo, Lakeland, or Dairy Gold, and they're all, you know, for 2021, like they were all kind of, look, on average it varied from month to month, but like there was a difference there of 4, maybe 5 cents a litre, and. Okay, so why the difference? And I mean, it's multifactorial, and so there's the piece around profit. PPI doesn't allow for profit, so I mean, if the businesses that we're talking about there are going to make 2% or 2.5% profit, well then that's a difference, and that equates to cent per liter when you bring that back to base level. There's obviously the piece around not all their product is going through Ornua. So for example, Lakeland, like less than 10% of their product is going through Ornua. So they're dependent on a different market. They're dependent on powders largely, like we'll say in the Lakeland space, plus the food service side of things and the consumer foods. So their milk price relative to the PPI is not reflective, because they're not dealing with Ornua, you know, to cut a long story short, you know. So there's some of the differences, Anne, in terms of why the PPI is different profit, and not maybe dealing in the products that Ornua are dealing with, and that they're getting obviously a premium for their Kerrygold and for the butter that they're selling, the cheeses that they're selling, we'll say, on the global markets through the Kerrygold brand. So that's part of the difference, definitely, in terms of the PPI.
And Jack, like, one of the things that we're also conscious of at the moment is the cost environment. It's fair to say, like, in terms of the results that were presented and that you've reflected in the paper, like, those significant increases in costs that we've been talking about in recent weeks, and particularly energy, they're just not reflected yet. So really it's looking into their procurement of energy now and how that plays out over the next year. Like, yeah. What's their mix of energy, and how concerned are they about the cost environment as it impacts on, I suppose, the processing business, and particular on the drying and the commodity business?
Yeah, it's huge, Anne, like, because I mean, it is their main cost in terms of the process piece, and especially for drying, as they're trying to drive that water out of the product. It's a huge cost. So there's a good mix of different energy sources, but I mean, availability of gas is the big issue. It's still a big issue for them, and they said, "Listen, hands up, we have a mix of different energy sources." But the reality is that if there was a shortage of gas, like even the other sources of energy are going to become scarce. So there were, you know, Michael Handley was making the point that, listen, you know, I mean, it's okay, we're on pipe gas in some of our main processing units, but he says, like, it's all very well, you know, but he says if there is a shortage, all the other pressures come on all the other energy sources, and you know, you're back in the same. So the money, or the number he was putting on it in terms of what it's going to cost him in terms of processing this year, is that it's going to cost on an annualized basis, kind of as in when they're processing milk all year round, it's going to cost 3 cents a litre. So I mean, in terms of a processing cost, if it was at 6.5 or 7, that means the processing cost has gone to 10 cents a litre over the year for that, because of that extra energy cost that they have to purchase. And I mean, and none of them, they were all, you know, had bits and pieces of hedging done or whatever, but none of them were seem to be going back to the market in terms of hedging, I suppose, the cost of that energy, because effectively they'd be guaranteeing to buy at that kind of high price. And I mean, the piece is, so it fluctuates up and down in terms of the energy piece, or what might happen in the Ukraine and Russia at the moment. They're standing back from the market at the moment and taking what they need, but they've all got guarantee that, listen, they'll have enough of energy, whether it's pipe gas or diesel heavy oils, etc. But look, they're not holding much sway on that guarantee.
And I suppose the big question that farmers will have is, where will that 3 cents a litre come from? Are they going to pay for it in milk price or some part of it? Or does the market have the capacity to take higher prices when we're already at peak prices in some commodities and well above them?
Yeah, very definitely. That's the big question, and that we won't see that, as you say, until maybe, you know, the next couple of months in terms of the meat price that they're coming out with, but also the kind of how the business is affected as a result of it, and the numbers that come out next year, looking at 2022. You know, so yeah, definitely. I mean, Michael Handy was making the point on the retail side of it. They have a long way to go yet in terms of getting that back from the market, and you know, anyone that's dealing with the retailers, like they're always, you know, struggling to an extent to get that back from the market. So yeah, there's a bit to go on that. And I mean, as you say, the commodity prices are good. And look at farm gate milk price is increasing. We can't get away from that. You saw big increases this week from Lakeland and Glanbia in terms of the base price that they are paying. So they're playing catch up. That's for March, obviously, you know. So they're playing catch up in terms of the markets and what they're returning. So look, it will be interesting to see kind of when that 3 cents a litre comes out. But ultimately, Anne, doesn't it? It comes out of the shareholders. It comes out of the members. It comes out of the milk suppliers. In terms of, yeah, they'll ultimately have to pay for it either in lower dividends or lower milk price.
Jack, you met all of the chief executives. Did any of them have a crystal ball in terms of where they see the commodity markets going? Are they positive? Are any of them feeling, you know, somewhat nervous given where, I suppose, consumer price inflation is at? Are they anticipating, you know, a potential downturn?
No, look, to call a spade, and they're very positive. They're definitely talking about kind of this year being a good year, and like the reality is that, you know, here we are in April recording this, and the reality is that, you know, milk price is going to be good across peak, you know, no matter really what happens now. And so, you know, for the majority of farmers, you know, 60-70% of their milk will be produced in that kind of April, May, June, July period. So it really is going to be a good year in terms of milk price. But that's obviously only one part of it, because costs obviously at farm level as well have gone up significantly, and that's going to make the margin smaller for the farmer. So they're not getting the full benefit of the high commodity prices that are there at the moment. But no, in summary, they are positive in terms of milk price. And that's as much as they said. Listen, we'll see 3 months, 4 months down the line, but that's as much as they're prepared to go.
And Jack, on debt, just looking across all of the accounts that you'd reported on, I think Arrivo at this stage are debt free. Lakeland's debt is coming well down. Dairy Gold's debt's coming well down. I think Lakeland down somewhat as well. How do you read that in terms of, you know, the picture of where Irish Dairy Inn is at?
Yeah. So the Arrivo piece, the first time that they were in a surplus, in a cash balance in terms of their piece. And like, so the issue with Arrivo is, of course, they're a relatively small player compared to the other two. So like, I mean, give or take, Arrivo with their 500, 600 billion litres of milk, it's the same as Carbery in West Cork. They need to keep debt relatively low for the size and scale of their business. The other two, they have 80, I think Lakeland, I think off the top of my head, at 89 million of long-term debt, and Dairy Gold, I think maybe give or take 108 or something like that in terms of long-term debt. Again, both of the chief executives in Dairy Gold and Lakeland and the CFOs were comfortable that, listen, at 1.9, 1.8 times EBITDA, that it was going to be comfortable to be able to continue on the journey that they were on in terms of repaying that, and that, you know, it was invested in a good place in terms of processing capacity, and that's returning to their shareholders. Suppliers at the moment.
So really, it's probably a period of consolidation now. Investment is done. It's paying down the debt, and farmers reaping the returns from that ultimately.
Absolutely. Yeah, ultimately that's where they are. Yeah, no, there's no big spend coming on from either of them at the moment. There is ongoing capex, I'll call it, you know, but no big spend in the pipeline for either of them at the moment. Much no, and that's part of the problem in Lakeland. There's a lot of shareholder saying, listen, it's a pity, we need to do something because we have brownfield sites in Banbridge, etc., and that kind of thing that could be invested in and that could kind of take us take the quad on to the next level.
But just unlikely to see anything happening there.
I think in the short term, likely. But look, I do think that they'll the feedback that they're getting now is that they'll kind of take a deeper look at it, and they will try and see what is required and maybe move on it, I'd say, in the coming months. Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, listen, it'll be an interesting place to look back this time next year, because we're heading into a different type of market, certainly on the cost side. So who knows what that brings and what it brings for each of the businesses.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that'll you know, in terms of the balance sheets and the profit and loss accounts next year, yeah, it will complete the story and see where we are despite the huge commodity prices that we have, just how the business can cope with the extra costs and managing that piece. So yeah, no, listen, excellent. Listen, folks, it's been good to chat on all things dairy and some of the significant results that are coming out in terms of the annual report. And look, I'm sure we'll touch on it again in the next couple of weeks. So thanks for that. Thanks for listening.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.